You're listening to 101.5, and it's wonderful to have us with this morning, Matt McLaughlin, who is an Australian author, historian, and TV presenter. Matt, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Mick. Good to be here.
That's wonderful. Hey, listen, 2024 marks the 110th anniversary of the commencement of World War One, and I've read that World War One started after the assassination of Archduke Franz Ferdinand of Austria on the 28th of June 1914. However, many other reports actually say that the war commenced a month or so later. Matt, are you able to give us some background on World War One and when it actually did start?
Yeah, I certainly can, Mick. It's a convoluted story which would probably take up the rest of your program, so I'll try and keep it fairly simple. But you're right. In June 1914, Archduke Franz Ferdinand of the Austro-Hungarians was assassinated in Sarajevo in Bosnia, and the people that assassinated him were Serbians who were protesting and wanting independence for their country. And so obviously Austria at this time was pretty outraged and wanted to take action against Serbia, but Serbia was a big ally of Russia, and so the Austro-Hungarians knew that if they took action against Serbia, Russia would get involved. And then Germany would get involved to defend Austria, and that's exactly what happened. It was like dominoes falling, small little countries starting to fight against each other, and then their much more powerful partners and allies getting involved. So Austria invaded Serbia, Russia declared war on Austria, and then Germany declared war on Russia, and that brought France and Britain into the war as well. So that's all very convoluted. But basically, from Australia's perspective, the important date is the 4th of August, 1914, because at that point, Germany invaded neutral Belgium to try and attack France. And the world considered it a great outrage that Germany had marched into a neutral country. And so Britain gave Germany an ultimatum. And when Germany didn't respond to that, didn't withdraw from Belgium, Britain declared war, and Australia declared war the same day, which was the 5th of August in Australia. So on the morning of the 5th of August, Australia joined Britain in declaring war on Germany.
Which made a real world war with everybody becoming involved.
Yeah, it was almost inevitable, I think. I mean, I know that the assassination of Franz Ferdinand was the spark that lit this huge fire. But the point is the bonfire was already stacked, to use that analogy. So it was all ready to go. There were huge armies massing on borders in Europe, and it was only going to take one small incident for the war to kick off, and that was the assassination. So in some ways, the war was almost inevitable, but this was the sequence of events that led to it beginning.
And Matt, you've written a number of books tracing the history of our battles around the world, and I know that your first one was Walking with the Anzac. Can you just tell us what the inspiration was that took you on such a journey to track the battles of our Anzacs?
Yeah, thanks for asking that question, Mick. It's a good one. I've always been fascinated with our Anzac history since I was a little kid, and my dad used to take me to the War Memorial in Canberra. I've always been fascinated with the stories of the Anzacs. And so in the early 2000s, I was fortunate enough to visit several of these battlefields in Europe and to walk the ground. And I realized that when you visit these battlefields in France, Belgium, where the Australians had fought in the First World War, there often wasn't anything to indicate what you were looking at. You were just standing in the middle of a field and you couldn't really get a perspective on what had gone on there. And so I wrote my first book, which was Walking with the Anzacs, which is a guide to those battlefields of the Western Front in France and Belgium. It tells the Australian story, it reveals what the Anzacs did, and it presents itineraries that you can follow on the ground to make sure you're walking in the footsteps of the Anzacs and learning their full story. So that came out in 2007 was the first time that came out, and it's been in print ever since. And actually last year we did the updated version for 2023, so it's now been fully updated and is still available for anyone to read if they want to go and walk that ground themselves.
Oh, look, and that's wonderful. And I know that you've got a new book coming out, but we're just going to take a quick, short break. And when we come back, we'll be here to discuss your new book. And you're listening to 101.5, and I have with me this morning war historian Matt McLaughlin. And Matt, we're talking about your new book that's about to come out. Would you be able to tell us what that is all about?
Yeah, sure thing, Mick. The new book is called Krithia, and it's about a battle that took place in Gallipoli that was a huge battle for the Anzacs, but no one seems to remember that it even took place. So I wanted to redress that and tell what is an amazing story. And so it's basically about a battle that occurred on the 8th of May 1915, so only 10 days after the landing at Gallipoli, when Australian and New Zealand troops were sent to the British sector of Gallipoli and fought alongside British and French troops against the Turks near the village of Krithia. And it was a disaster. We lost about 50% of the men that we sent down there. So out of about 5,000 men that we sent to the Helles sector, more than half of them, or about half of them, were killed or wounded. So it was a horrific battle, a huge ordeal for the Anzacs. But for whatever reason, it's completely slipped through the cracks of history, and most Aussies and New Zealanders don't even know the name Krithia. So I was privileged to write the book and to tell that story.
Oh, look, and that's wonderful. And I know that we've spoken previously about the walking tours that you do of the actual battlefields, and you take, you know, people there, and it's how emotional it was. But I guess, are people shocked on how daunting the task would have been for our Anzacs when they stand on those beaches of, like, Gallipoli?
Yeah, they absolutely are, Mick, and I think this battlefield we've just talked about, Krithia, is a great example. And I'm really fortunate that next year in May I'm going to be leading a tour to Gallipoli, and we're going to be walking this ground. And it's incredibly emotional, because this is a great example of how being on the ground can just bring it all into focus for you, because the Australians who died in this battle lay out in the battlefields until after the war. And when Australians went back after the war was over and walked the ground at Gallipoli, they found the skeletons of these Aussies still lying on the battlefield where they'd been killed. And so they were all buried in a cemetery nearby. And so today, when we walk the ground, you can not only walk across the battlefield in their footsteps and get that eerie sense of what it must have been like to cross that ground under fire, but then you come to the cemetery where the men who died are buried today. And it's just such an emotional journey to cross that ground in their footsteps, to know that you're standing on a place where hundreds of people died, and then to arrive at the cemetery and see that Australian rising sun on the headstones and read about all the boys from back home who are now lying in Turkey. So it's a very emotional experience to walk that ground.
Yeah, I think people are shocked, and they really underestimated what it was like for our Aussie diggers over there. And it's those sort of tours that brings it home to everyone.
Yeah, I think you're right. And the one thing we can't understand from sitting in Australia and reading about these battles is the scale of the death. And it's not until you get there and see these huge cemeteries with literally thousands of burials in them that you start to understand the cost and the horror of these events. And the only way to do that is by walking the ground. And Gallipoli is one of those places that's just iconic. And every Australian who goes there just comes away with this just incredible emotional sense of what it was all about. And, you know, it's like no other battlefield on earth. So you can probably tell I'm getting excited just the thought of getting back there and walking that ground and telling these stories, because it's just such a magical experience.
You're listening to 101.5, and we'll continue our conversation here with Matt McLaughlin, our war historian. Matt, if people aren't in a position to take one of your battlefield tours and they're off to Europe, is there one particular battle site that they should have on their must-visit list?
That's a great question, Mick. I mean, there's a couple of key ones. It really depends where you're going. Pretty much anywhere in Europe, there are battlefields or battle sites you can visit connected with the Australians. So if you're in Paris, for example, the Australian battlefields are only an hour or so away. And if you can only visit one site, I'd say make it Villers-Bretonneux in the Somme region, because that's where the Australian National Memorial is. There's a huge cemetery there containing lots of Australians. There's a wall of honour which records nearly 11,000 names of missing Australians from the fighting. And there's a fantastic new commemorative centre there, interpretive centre, called the Sir John Monash Centre, which tells the story of Australians in the First World War. So if you're going to go to France and you've only got a day, definitely Villers-Bretonneux in the Somme is the place you want to go.
Look, and that's wonderful. And, of course, one of our best displays of World War One and our Anzac spirit is at the Australian War Memorial in Canberra, which is a must-visit for all Australians. But it is undergoing significant renovations. Are you able to give us an update on how they are going?
Yeah, absolutely. I was fortunate to be down there meeting with the director, Matt Anderson, a month or so ago, and we took the time to go through and have a look at all the construction work that's going on there. And it is a bit of a construction site at the moment. But it's coming along very well, and some of the historians there, including Carl James, the head of history there, gave me a bit of a behind-the-scenes tour of what was coming up, and it's pretty impressive stuff. I mean, it's been controversial, the money that's being spent and the changes at the War Memorial, but I think at the end of the day, it's going to lead to a pretty impressive impressive result. And so, yes, there's lots of plans for new displays of aircraft, and some of the most important Australian stories are going to be much better told in the redeveloped War Memorial, particularly some of those later conflicts where there wasn't space to tell the story of Afghanistan and Iraq and some of our more recent conflicts. So I think particularly for veterans of those conflicts, they're going to find that their wars that they fought in are much better represented at the War Memorial. So they still have several years to go until they're finished, but I think the result's going to be pretty impressive.
I think it's going to be hugely impressive. As a matter of fact, I don't know if it'd be possible to do in one day. What's your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. It was already pretty extensive, the displays that are there. So I think it's going to be a several day trip from now on to take it all in. But some of the technology in particular is going to be quite exciting. So I was shown, for example, Lockie Grant, one of the historians there, showed me what they're doing with G for George, the famous Lancaster bomber, and how it's going to be on display. And on my Living History podcast, we actually talked all about that, a bit of a behind-the-scenes tour of what's going on at the Australian War Memorial. So it's really exciting. I mean, I was in two minds about whether the investment was worth it at the War Memorial, but the decision was made to spend the money, so now we all have to get on board, and I think the money is going to be pretty well spent from what I've seen there.
Well, I've seen the lines when you get down there, so I think many, many Australians are of the same view, and I'd certainly encourage all Australians to make a purposeful visit down to the War Memorial in Canberra.
Yeah, I agree. It's one of our great institutions, and it tells a really important story. So I absolutely agree. If you're in Canberra, make it one of your essential stops.
Wonderful. Matt, look, thank you for sharing your knowledge of World War One and, of course, our War Memorial down there in Canberra. And thank you for being here with us on 101.5 this morning.
Thanks, Mick.